Live,
a podcast of the cinema. It's the last linoleum knife of the year.
Yes. Thanks, singing.
You're welcome.
Host, what is your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. You're Dave White. Yep. We are film critics. We are married to each other. We both write for The Wrap.
Yes.
And we have a special guest today.
You have a weird thing on your face from like headphones or your glasses or whatever.
Okay.
Like under your glasses lens. You should wipe that off. Weird. Oh, it's on your glasses.
No, it's, yeah. It's earphone schmutz.
Earphone pieces on the glasses.
Perhaps in 2020, I'll get some new ones.
If you're good.
Maybe.
If you behave. Like, can you behave?
Like you are in charge of any of this.
Can you be good? I can't. I'm just asking if you can.
One of us needs to. We have a guest today, oft commented upon and quoted on this program.
Many times, like, of all the friends who pass in and out of this apartment.
Mm-hmm. Or go to screenings with us.
Or go to screenings with us. Or who show up mid-show.
Show, yes.
For also. Whatever reason, like, just to hang out. Or to put together a huge new dining room table. Or to have a nap. Or, in the case of Linoleum Nights, one time, to sit in the corner on camera and eat an entire box of Fruit Loops silently while we did the podcast. Of all those friends.
Yes, there's only one.
There's only one who is named Gary Cotti.
Yes.
And he's not a film critic.
No.
But he is a film and television industry professional.
Yes.
Which
an
gives
industry
him,
insider.
Which gives him insight.
Indeed.
Into cinema. And so it just so happens that this week he has seen all three of the films we're going to talk about. And I said, after Cats was over, and he said, I'm going to come on your podcast. I said, yeah. And that's how big appearance deals are brokered.
Yes. A lot of negotiation. Anyway, welcome, Gary.
It's great to be here. How do I sound?
Great.
I don't know.
Oh, spectacular.
I hope Terrific. You're not blowing out the
you
mic.
You actually just had a great idea, because the thing is, after people see Cats, I feel like there should be like a discussion in the theater called After Cats. Kind of like After MASH.
Or The Talking Dead.
Right.
Do the ad.
Yeah, I will do the ad.
Do the advertisement.
Right, fine.
That was
a smooth segue.
Thank
Dave
you. I'm known for that.
Yes, this we have a sponsor this week. Why is my phone suddenly pretending like it doesn't know my thumb? Pause. Hang on. Gary made the PAWS joke while I paused for a second there. We have so much to talk about when it comes to Cats. But anyway, before that, Linoleum Knife is brought to you by our good friends at thestardraft.com.
Yes.
You know what? We're in the thick of award season.
Yes.
Golden Globe nominations have come out.
Yes.
Oscars
I'm not watching
are
the Golden Globes,
around
man.
The corner. Well, you know,
Ricky Gervais can jump off a cliff.
Currently
done with him.
You're not helping Ricky Gervais. But really, did I need much of an excuse to boycott the Golden Globes?
No.
Not really. So, yeah, there we go. Anyway, so you go to the Star Draft, and it's like fantasy football meets award season. You form a league with friends. You all draft a bunch of celebrities to your individual team. When those celebs earn nominations or awards, you get points. And, of course,
I have a new team.
Do you?
Yeah.
What is it?
Everybody in Little Women.
Okay.
Plus
Fatma Mohammed. Right, of course. Can't let Fatma Mohammed from In Fabric go. Anyway, if you listen to this show, you know, you're super in the know about this stuff. But yeah, you'll pick the right celebrities, you'll earn points, you'll win your league, you'll slay your friends, and obtain supreme control over the galaxy. It's super easy and super free, and this week, StarDraft has a limited-time offer. If you create a StarDraft account between now and New Year's Eve, you will be automatically invited to join the Gordon Gekko Greed is Good League.
Yes.
That has a prize of $100.
Which I realize I cannot win.
It would be hinky.
But my choices are so good that I would win.
You would think, yes.
Louis Garrel.
He's
going to win the Academy Award for Best Hair, Eyebrows, and Nose.
Bob Odenkirk.
Cinema.
Everybody in Little Women. All the little women. All you have to do is head to www.thestardraft.com. Sign up before December 31st. You will be invited to join the Greed League. Accept that invite. You'll be given a draft time, and then when it's time for that draft to happen, you'll go back to thestardraft.com to enter your choices. Draft the team of celebrities, set your lineup, and let the points start rolling in when the Golden Globes happen on Sunday, January 5th. Every week after the Globes, your celebs will be up for more points in other categories. But remember, Star Draft is way better than Friends. So create a league, invite your friends today. It's super easy, doesn't cost a thing, like my love. Sign up today at www.thestardraft.com. That's www.thestardraft.com.
Was that a Jennifer Lopez reference?
Yes, it was.
She was so good in Hustlers.
If he wants to floss, he got his own.
Yes. Los Angeles Film Critics winner, Best Supporting Actress, Jennifer Lopez.
So, hey, we're going to do something a little backwards.
Yes.
This week. Normally, we save letters for the end. Mm-hmm. But, and we're going to do a couple.
We do have a couple, yeah.
But there's a very important letter that I got this week that I want to read and then address.
Okay.
Because I am in trouble.
You were bad.
You were also a little in trouble, but I'm more
it's
in trouble.
It's really more
it's
you.
It's more though. Me. Yeah. And so, this happens. I mean, people write to us a lot and say, you guys are wrong about this, you're wrong about that. And often I'll just say, yeah, no, I'm not. But this person is right.
Yes.
And as I read the letter, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm... Yeah, okay. So I have to read the letter, and I have to talk about it.
Okay.
Because I have been wrong, and I need to say so. All right, here's the letter. It is from an anonymous woman mm-hmm. who listens to the show and who spends the first paragraph telling us how great we are. I don't need to read that because it's weirdly self-aggrandizing if I read that in a letter that then continues on to you know, take
well,
me to task.
You know, she's given us a little bit of
but she
carrot,
likes
carrot before
she
the
likes
stick.
Happens, yeah, she likes know. Us. She says, I'm nervous to be writing to you today to offer a point of concern. The past few weeks of episodes have been difficult for me to listen to as one of your female listeners and as someone whose interest in cinema is largely centered on representations of women on the big screen. I tried very hard not to write in and just move on with my life, but I was honestly quite surprised when no other responses came in last week about this topic. In fact, you spoke quite a bit about how valuable you find it to sit back and engage with perspectives that are not your own. That was a jarring bit of dialogue to take in after the previous week, when you openly mocked people, I assume many of them women, for calling The Irishman sexist. While you speak very eloquently about your willingness to openly engage with art by people of color, as white viewers, it seems you have forgotten that you are men. I'm not interested in reactivating the debate around whether or not The Irishman is sexist, though I am especially sensitive to voiceless women in cinema, and it meant quite a lot to me that the women in the film were, for the most part, literally voiceless. Instead, I would like to suggest that you take women's criticisms of female representation a bit more seriously. You're, of course, entitled to your own opinions, and I would hate for you to feel like you have to censor yourselves in any way. I'm merely asking you to expand your previously stated intention to engage with perspectives that are not your own. Women, especially female film critics, are all too used to their criticisms of male art being laughed off as irrational hysteria. I'm sure you know this, as people who regularly champion some of my favorite female critics on the podcast. This letter is also influenced by Dave's comments last week about an inability to access empathy for Roger Ailes' sexual assault victims because they worked for Fox News. Dave, I know that you verbally expressed a need to reevaluate this on the air, and I really appreciate that, but it was still extremely hard to hear. As men, you don't have to grapple with the everyday possibility of sexual harassment, assault, or rape in the same way that women do. And this just felt like another signal that you are unwilling to fully engage with the female experience. I know that's not the case, and I really hope you don't take this letter as condemnatory in any way. I believe you to be two guys with an incredible amount of insight and empathy, and I know it will mean something for you to hear that one of your female listeners has felt alienated by recent episodes. Thank you for all the work you do to put the show out and into the world for free. I really value your opinions and look forward to new episodes every week. Take care and happy holidays. So here is my response. It's a response I've written.
Yes.
Because I wanted to make sure I got everything
in there.
And you know, I spent like a bit, you know, responding to this. And so I'm going to read on the air the response I made. Hello, initial of the person who wrote. Thank you for writing, because I realized the moment that I talked about Bombshell that I was really letting my prejudices be known publicly, even though it was in an effort to confront them. First, Irishman. I am in the wrong, because I shouldn't be mocking anyone's assessment of a film, even if I disagree with that assessment. I spent years at movies.com roasting films for having five main male characters and almost always one solitary female lead, and she was always the wife or the girlfriend, and she barely spoke. It's the water in the fish tank that people just accept as normal, because they're the fish. So then comes The Irishman, and the women rarely speak, and I see how that narrative risk can inadvertently serve to reinforce the normalcy of films that do this routinely. When I got up that morning, I saw a thing on Twitter the morning that we recorded the show for The Irishman. When I got that morning, I saw a thing on Twitter collecting various tweets about the Anna Paquin seven words of dialogue situation. I honestly cannot recall if there were more women or men, but it was probably more women, like you said. And my thought was, well, that's often a problem in lesser films, but this one is different. And off I went, certain that I was correct. This is a hazard of being a film critic that I tried to avoid, but clearly I did not avoid it here. The upshot is that I should not have been openly mocking other people's takes on that element of the film. It is at least unkind, and at worst, a-holish. Mm-hmm. And for that, I apologize. I will say so on the next episode. And I do. You know, we mock each other. We mock our friends. Sometimes we mock people's opinions of films.
Sure.
I can't say that I'm not going to mock people's opinions of films in the future. I'm...
only human.
Sometimes I'm bad. But this... I did not think... I'm off script now. I'm not reading the letter at the moment. The Irishman is still a film that I believe to be doing that thing for the right reasons.
Right. And I think that a lot of times the films that do it for the wrong reason, it goes uncommented upon.
Right.
And then suddenly there was...
because they're just not important films.
Right. And because, again, it's the water in the fish tank. We're just used to it all the time.
Yeah.
And so for this movie that seems to be doing it intentionally and to make a point to then get attacked for it felt like, hey.
But that's not the point.
I understand.
The point is that it's another brick in the wall.
I understand.
Regardless of its quality.
Sure.
And so me mocking people for having a problem historically was something that is now happening in a new film that is considered to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to be more sensitive to that. And I apologize for that. I'm not going to do that again. So there's that. Now, Bombshell. As for Bombshell, you are 100% right about men not having to deal with the same kind of everyday possibility of harassment and abuse, and with that comes a general problem with men. In fact, it is a series of things. It is easy for us to miss this stuff because lots of women don't talk about it. Then we have to be told about it. And when we don't, we have to be told about it when we don't see it happening. And then we must believe it. And then we must remember it, and then we must act to make the world different. So as I watched Bombshell, it was easy and even reflexive for me to have sympathy for and be on the side of the composite characters who were subject to the Ailes abuse, because they weren't Carlson or Kelly, two specific women everybody knows about. But when it was over, I thought to myself, okay, so you have sympathy for composite fictionalized characters, but not for these two real people because you hate everything about what they stand for. And that felt weird and bad, because once you have that feeling, then it becomes a very, then it becomes a thing where you begin to decide which victims are worthy of not being abused.
Right.
And I knew that was wrong, and it nagged at me, and it's a short leap from, I'm vehemently opposed to this person's ideas and how they use them in the world, I hate their racism and their right-wing propaganda, and they work for an entire media outlet devoted to that, to, therefore they deserve anything that happens to them.
Right.
It's easy to forget the humanity of the people who feel like your enemies, and I knew that I was guilty of doing that, so I talked about it on the show, sorting out my feelings in real time on the mic. I could have couched it in the third person, trying to admonish people, men specifically, not to pick and choose which woman gets to be treated like a human being. But I decided, unwisely, to just say that I too struggled with that while watching the film. I realize now that I ran an even greater risk of being seen as someone who, in a broad way, doesn't want to listen to women when they tell that story, which is not the case. So I'm sorry for messing that up. I have to be better about not only how I express myself, but also the more important problem, which is simply acknowledging that no one deserves abuse, even if they have very bad politics. Cultural power is not institutional power, and as a queer person, I should not forget that. Now I'm off the letter again. Because, yeah, queer people have gotten exactly where they are by having cultural power and shaping the narrative. You know, by making people listen to us. Mm-hmm. We've never had institutional power, but we have cultural power. And so Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson had a certain amount of cultural power, but they're women and they don't have institutional power.
Certainly not at Fox News.
And not even in their workplace where they are stars, or were.
Right.
And so I have to remember that. And so that was especially stupid of me. So I apologize for that. I'm going to continue and finish the letter, and then you can say what you're going to say. I'm speaking to the letter writer again. I want to thank you for writing, because not just as a host of the show, but as a human being, I make all kinds of mistakes and fail at doing, thinking, being the right person, what I feel is an alarming percentage of the time. So I need people to be unafraid to step in and say, hey, dummy, be better. I appreciate our listeners for taking me to task when it's time. Thank you.
Yeah, the thing with Kelly and Carlson reminds me of, you know, there was a period on Facebook where, you know, there were a lot of right-wing women in the news whose viewpoints I find abhorrent. You know,
right.
the whole Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann period.
Right.
But I would have to remind people on Facebook, this is not a license for you to use the B word or the C word just
right.
because they happen to be women that you don't agree with.
Right. You were not addressing that to me.
No.
I've never done that.
No, you did not. But folks yeah, did.
Folks did. So, yes. I hope that addresses the letter. Because when I read it, I thought, oh, dang, she's right. Like, on both counts.
Mm.
And I've been, you know, less than smart about this. So I have to be better and not so less than smart.
Good. I agree, you do. And I do too. Now, Star Wars.
All right. Okay.
A franchise that's always known how to treat its female characters.
All right. You went to the premiere.
Yes.
I hate going to premieres.
I don't love them. I went because the premiere was Monday. The press screenings were Tuesday, from starting at 10 a.m. and throughout the day. The embargo lifted Wednesday at midnight, basically.
Yeah.
So it was like, do I get to sleep on this and write a review in the morning, or do I have to see it and then crank out something immediately? I chose the former, so I went to the premiere.
Yeah, and you know what, the regular press screenings for, you know, the non-fancy people, like, uh-huh. I mean, you're a fancy person.
Which were also the same day as all the Cats press screenings.
They were still at the LCAP, which have torture seats,
yes.
So I wasn't about to go to that. This morning, I went to the Arclight at 8:15.
You love around-the-clock movie opening.
I love around-the-clock weekend because when they screen it Well, if y'all don't live in a big city like Los Angeles, what will some theaters will happen is they'll screen these films 24 hours a day for like the first weekend.
Yeah.
And for people like me who get up at the crack of dawn, before the sun, I'm up at 5. And so...
why not go to a movie at 8:15?
Why not go to a 6 a.m., a 7 a.m., a 7:30, an 8 a.m.? Because they had all of those today, but I thought, well, you know, I'm going to take Gary Cotti, so I'm going to give him a chance to sleep in a little bit.
Thank you.
And so we went to 8:15.
And there were what, like 9 other people there?
There were 20 tops, 20 total, yeah.
Which I think also affects how you watch a movie like this.
How do you feel?
Like,
how do you
figure? Because there's so much hype and, like, you know, Star Wars excitement that it's probably very different to watch this movie.
Yeah, if you'd gone
in
like
a crowd full of super fans versus, but we can talk about this.
Oh, yeah, I'm immune.
If you'd gone on like a third,
I'm not as an everyman here.
Yeah.
I'm not immune to that.
Yeah, whether it would have changed your ideas personally or not, there is something about if you'd gone Thursday night. Yeah, like you said, with a packed house of super fans, there would have been moments in the film that would have received a big woo or whatever. That 20 people at 8:15 in the morning on a Sunday
never
did not
go to opening night of something like this again, because the last time I did that for The Force Awakens.
Oh, right. There was a bomb scare.
There was a bomb scare at the Grove, and everyone had to evacuate the theater, and I thought, we're all going to die. I'm leaving. I'm going home. And that's, reader, that's just what I did.
Yes.
And so I'm, you know, I just think everything is going to be like a mass shooting now, so I don't go to those kinds of things.
No, I mean, it Littleton? Was that the Dark Knight screening?
The Dark Knight
screening. Yeah, that's always in the back of my mind, too, when these, like, big... I get invited to, like, oh, a bunch of us are going to opening that. I'm like...
I'm not. Yeah. So the... this is the 9th Star War.
Of the official saga,
not counting the Star Wars stories, Rogue One and Solo.
Correct.
Are we allowed to talk about things that happen in this movie?
Well, Alonso was going to give a brief synopsis of the plot,
yeah,
for people who don't understand what a Star War is, and then
we're going to keep it vague and save the spoilers.
His parameters, and then we'll do spoilers
at the very, very,
very, very end after we say goodbye.
Yes,
yeah,
okay. So basically, what happens this time around is, you know what, I'm going to say this part because it's like in the trailers, and it's there's no way you haven't heard about it by now, but Emperor Palpatine is not dead. And so,
is that in the trailer?
Yeah, it's come up.
It's if it's not in the trailer, it's in the opening crawl.
Yeah, they pretty much tell you right away. So Emperor Palpatine is back and seems to be like getting things ready for a big terrible thing. And so of course the rebels have to, like, you know, amass against him. And so there's a lot of going to the place to get the thing to fight the guy, very MacGuffin-y kind of objects and things that have to be found by Rey and Finn and Poe, who are all traveling together. We find out a little bit about Poe's past. We find out a great deal about Rey's past. And, you know, we are brought to a place where this story is brought to a finale. And along the way,
oh, that's a sketchy outline.
I'm trying. I don't want to spoil it. You know,
there's a beginning, middle, and an end. Yeah. Thank you.
And I will say that they go out of their way to undo as much of the rise of the Last Jedi as they possibly can. It would appear.
Kelly Marie Tran has nothing to do.
Nothing.
In this film.
And no relationship with Finn, seemingly, even though they were setting one up last time.
Right. And I was, every time she'd come on screen, I'd think to myself, oh, this is when she's going to get to be someone like she was in the last movie. Nope.
Nope.
Nope. She's here to talk about, like, generators and technology and stuff. Like, that's, she's a person who explains machinery.
Yeah.
For the entire course of this film. Which makes no sense to me until I was reminded by Twitter today what the fans...
Yes, she was one of the things that fans hated about The Last Jedi.
Yeah. And then she was... It wasn't just that they hated her character.
Oh, yeah. No, they drove her off social media by being such awful, awful people.
They, everyone, like, was super racist to her. and drove her off social media with all the blistering hate for an actor playing a character.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. I complained when Last Jedi happened that through no fault of her own, that character is just sort of like shoved in. They don't really give her like enough of a backstory. Like, she's just suddenly thrown into the action.
That's a fault of the film.
And that's a fault of the film. It's not her fault at all. It felt like for years there had been, you know, fans had quite rightly been saying, why are there no women of color in Star Wars? And then rather than create an interesting one and give her, make her a full-fledged character, this one is like tossed into the action. It's kind of like, wait, where does she fit in here? And that's not on Kelly Marie Tran. That's on the movie just abruptly doing that. And so in this movie where they had an opportunity to like bring her back, give her more scenes, create the depth that were not, they didn't give her in Last Jedi, it's like, we'll just put her on the margin there and have her say the occasional bit of like exposition and whatever interpersonal relationship she has with Finn.
These films are not always good with character development.
No.
And like, you know, do emotional nuances and things like
do
that.
We think,
however, I thought she was fine. And I thought her character was as reasonably introduced as, you know.
Do we think Lupita Nyong'o knew how little screen time she was signing up for when she signed up for this trilogy?
Probably. I mean, I'm sure they gave her a script, right?
Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is one of those, like, you know, Terrence Malick deals where, you know, you think you're the star of the movie and then you find out you have one line. Because she has, like, she's barely in Last Jedi and she's barely in this one. And they set her, you know, she gets a setup in Rise of Skywalker. She's, you know, she does, The Force Awakens. Blah, 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 blah. They all blur together. The cling clang mating ting.
She's a cool creature, though.
She is a cool creature, but like, barely in the movie. It's exasperating.
I took notice of Kelly Marie Tran not being integral at all to the plot of this film. Now, if you wanted to call the last film like a Star Wars story, and then not make it part of the trilogy, then it would have maybe perhaps made more sense, because you do sideline a little bit, not a lot, but
are you talking about this one or the previous
Finn and Poe and Rey in The Last Jedi? They are,
well, they're separate.
They're separated. Yeah. And so
which people complained about.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know what the answer is. here's what I do know, though. You can't please Star Wars fans.
No.
No matter what you do.
Nobody likes to hate Star Wars. Because like
I thought
Star Wars
The Last Jedi was cool.
Me too.
And I liked Rian Johnson's ideas. And I liked, you know, where they went with it. And I think this one's fine. I mean, this one's fine. This was definitely a return to, we're going to connect all the dots. We're going to cross all the T's. We're going to dot all the I's. We're going to show you things that you love from old-timey Star Wars, and incorporate that into, you know, this. We're going to give all of you irritating fans more of what you like and less of what you don't.
Yeah.
And here's my problem. I'm not even talking about whether or not I like this film or not. I'm talking about fans deciding what happens in art.
Yes.
And that is not a precedent you want to set.
No,
now, in the last film of a 9-movie series, I guess there's nowhere to go after that. But it still felt weird to me.
There was a thing I saw online today that they had mocked up the last of the opening credits to say written and directed by Reddit.
Yeah.
And yeah, this movie just so feels like here's all the things that you said you wanted, and it's kind of like, it's like eating at McDonald's. Like, you crave it, and then while you're eating it, it's sort of briefly satisfying, but very soon thereafter you're like, I don't know.
Don't make mouth noises on the mic.
Sorry, but you know what I mean.
I completely agree with that, because I knew we were going to see this movie this morning, and you know, when the episodes 1 through 3 came out,
yeah,
and you know, I had never seen a new Star Wars movie on the big screen since Return of the Jedi when I was 4 or 5, and when those movies came out, I was so excited to see a Star War on a new Star War that I saw that episode 1 5 times,
right,
and by the 5th time I was like, this is actually not a good movie. And I was just excited. So my experience this morning was, even when like the Star Wars comes up on the screen and the crawl and the music, I was very, very excited. And so about 25 minutes in, I was like, your excitement dies down a little bit that you're seeing a Star War. Yeah. And then you're like, I mean, like, it's a movie. Like, this tastes like a quarter pounder with cheese. And, you know.
I am happy I saw it. In the same way I'm happy I see Marvel movies.
Mm.
I enjoy them while I'm watching them, and then I leave and I don't think about them again. I don't spend time thinking about Star Wars or the MCU or any of that.
That's generally my Star Wars take as well. But yeah, even while watching this, when I was like, this feels so calculated to just like tick the boxes and tick, 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 in a way that Avengers Endgame doesn't. Like, that movie feels like we're still trying to do something about plot and character, yeah, such as they exist in these movies.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, I wasn't even getting that so much.
I got the emotional content that I, you know, hope I get in any film.
Sure.
But it generally comes, for me, from the older character.
Right.
I think Adam Driver is pretty great. I think Daisy Ridley is pretty great. Mm-hmm. I think they are really working to give you something more than a by-the-numbers performance in a film that is necessarily locking step toward a designated ending. It has to end a certain way. We have to, you know, go here, go here, go here, go here, and go here. And in that process, in that sort of restrictive atmosphere, they're giving performances that I admire.
Sure. But at the same time, I think, given that this is a last chapter, there are a couple of things that they could have gotten away with doing that maybe would have been momentarily, but right, would have had some emotional resonance.
Yeah.
And not only do they not do them,
right,
they pretend like they're gonna do them,
right,
and then they takesy backsy.
Yeah,
like, really? Come yeah on.
I know what you're talking about. We're gonna talk about
it. We're gonna talk about that at the end. Yeah,
I gasped at the part, uh-huh, that you're talking about. But then it didn't. Then it wasn't the
yeah
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that felt.
But even then, I knew I was like they're cheating. Gonna take this back. Like after the initial get. One
but they wouldn't yeah have. They wouldn't have had to.
Yeah, there was no.
Yeah, it's episode 9. Like, right, shoot the works a little. Do yeah something. You know. Kill Iron Man, you know.
Is that what happens in Endgame?
Yes.
I don't watch that one.
Kill that Iron Man. So here's what I liked. I liked all the little creatures that jump up and do things.
Mm.
The new ones. Like the other new little robot that's next to BB-8.
Who does nothing. Who is just there for the toys.
He says funny things.
Barely.
You talking about on the cone one?
Yeah, the yeah cone face.
The one that looks
yeah
like the lamp.
Yeah, I like cone face.
He says funny things.
We get a new droid, and we get a new CG character, and a new sort of human character. The one played by Carrie Russell, who you only ever see her eyes.
Oh, yeah.
She's dressed like the Rocketeer the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
And all I thought was like, toy, toy, toy. Like, that's, they don't, you could take them
well
out of this movie.
You're a cynical person,
because I am
a true Star Wars
they
fan.
Were not written to impact the plot or the story in any way. They're there for the toys.
They impacted me because I thought they were nice characters.
I like the good little, news for Felicity.
I like the cone face robot. He said funny things. I like the little CGI character who does the thing with C-3PO, because he goes, "Bow!" And it's just like that, and he does it more than once, and I think it's adorable. And then
he's Baby Yoda.
Who is not in this movie?
He is not in this movie.
How could Baby Yoda be in this movie?
He could be Teen Yoda.
Impossible. No. Oh, Baby Yoda, Yoda was already old when the
sweetie
when the people were old.
I watched
Baby Yoda is not Yoda.
Before, yeah, that's true. He's what? He's a member of Yoda's race.
He's a member of Yoda's species. What? The Mandalorian takes
what?
Place.
What? Oh yeah, God. Surprise. All right,
take a breath. The Mandalorian takes place like 5 years after Return of the Jedi, the movie in which Yoda dies. So Baby Yoda is not Yoda. Baby Yoda is a baby member of Yoda's species.
What? I went on YouTube knowing that I was going to see this movie because I actually don't remember what happened.
Well, I'm not watching The Mandalorian, so that's why I don't know these things. Continue.
I don't really remember what happened in The Last Jedi. I know enough. That it was cool and there was a lot of red.
Yes.
Like, that was cool. And so I watched one of those like YouTube people be like, I'm going to recap everything about Star Wars in chronological order in 22 minutes. And they just sort of shout at you and show you clips. It's very confusing. Because what happens is they start at episode 1 and then it takes you all the way up to episode 8. But then also includes comic books, that animated movie, Wars, The Mandalorian. And I was like,
Oh, yeah, there's like a droids movie and an Ewoks movie. Like when Bibbs and Whitney do, like when they do a Star Wars list there, it's like 40 things.
Comprehensive.
It's insane.
All right, so Yoda's name is Yoda.
And he belongs to a species that has
that's never been named in the Star Wars movies.
They call it Yoda's race or Yoda's species.
Yeah. Baby Yoda is just a nickname that the internet gave it. No, they don't call him Baby Yoda on the show.
Oh!
They don't call him Baby Yoda on the Baby Yoda show.
Exactly.
So on Baby Yoda, he doesn't have a name.
Correct.
Previously, but he's on just Baby Yoda.
He's just the child.
It's just the internet that calls him Baby Yoda.
Right.
Well, then why do they call it the Baby Yoda show if they don't want him to have a name?
Next, on an all-new Baby Yoda
show. On a fresh Baby Yoda.
Speaking of things that are confusing.
Yes.
Can I talk about Life Day?
Oh, why not?
They have Life Day in this movie, you guys. And that's not a spoiler. That's a bonus. That's a special moment.
Now, Life Day's already been made.
They didn't call it Life Day in this movie, but they said it's an annual. No, they didn't even say it's annual. They go, it's a festival of, you know, blah, 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 the ancestors and stuff like that. And then C-3PO says, and it happens every 42 years. Well, guess what happened 42 years ago?
The Star Wars holiday special. Actually, the Star Wars holiday special was 41 years ago.
Okay, sure, whatever.
But Star Wars is 42 years
roughly
ago.
Roughly speaking. Yes.
See, that's a thing. Like, I'm not a major Star Wars fan.
That
I
means
did not
B.
Know that.
Arthur is an official part of the Star Wars universe.
You had to lean over me and you're like, you know what this is? And I was like, no, I don't care. And you're like, it's Life Day.
Life Day has been made canon now in The Mandalorian. In the first episode, somebody
the Baby Yoda mentioned.
Please call it the correct name of the
Sorry, the Baby Yoda show. because somebody refers to it, and it's the first time that something outside of the holiday special refers to Life Day, because George Lucas was so mortified by the holiday special, he wanted to destroy all the
copies. By. Didn't he make it happen?
He sort of signed off on it, but clearly didn't maintain enough
control. That check cashed.
Listen.
Speaking of maintaining control, we've been talking about the sort of confusingness of all of this is that does it even feel like this trilogy, like they went into it knowing, okay, in chapter 7 this is going to happen, and then in 8 this is going to happen, and in episode 9 this is going to happen? Because it seems to me like if we're this busy undoing what happened in episode 8, they're making these up as they go along, right?
Probably.
And that's not good.
I neither know nor really care.
I'm just saying, this is no way to run a railroad.
I had, but getting back to the thing, I also liked Felicity being in this.
Her eyes, anyway.
It is a great time to be friends with J.J. Abrams.
And it made me
because you can be in a Star Wars.
Yeah, Greg Grunberg gets to be in a Star Wars.
Greg Grunberg, but how many other
guys from Lost? Was in there. I forget his name.
Oh.
Not Penny's boat guy.
I
think he's...
I've watched
how
one
How many other
of
people on Felicity were like stormtroopers or creatures?
I know. And meanwhile, Jennifer Garner's sitting by the phone from Alias. Like, hey, I could wear a Rocketeer outfit. What up, JJ? Thought we were friends.
I love Carrie Russell, and I'm glad she's in this movie.
Look, I want nothing but good things for her. You still need to watch The Americans, but
that's true.
This character is nothing.
Adam Driver is really good in this movie. That was my favorite part.
She has a few sexy moments with Adam Driver.
She does.
Wait,
Oh, no.
No. Kira Russell has... No, with Oscar Isaac.
Sorry. Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, Adam Driver's fine.
We're talking about things that we liked.
It's weird to watch him pour his intensity into this whiny butt character. like he's a whiny butt in Marriage Story, but in a different way.
Here's the thing. Every time he's on camera and he's getting like really intense, I immediately started thinking of like these scenes in Marriage Story where he like destroys Scarlett Johansson in arguments and then she destroys him back.
Right.
I mean, I think they lucked on...
lightsabers in Marriage Story. Right.
Exactly. I chuckled a little bit. I wanted him to like say one of those horrible lines that he says in that movie, in those arguments. But they didn't luck out. They carefully casted him, and that was probably one of the smartest things they did for these last three, because when he's not on camera, I was like, all right, let's get to some more, you know, explosive.
I think his love-hate relationship with Rey is one of the most interesting things in the movie, and the way they can sort of, that they literally get into each other's heads.
And that's a fun device, too.
Yeah, no, totally. They find some fun stuff to do with it, but it's just... I don't know. This just feels messily written in that, like, people die that don't really need to, they just do because they do, and there are whole, like, there's that whole thing about, you know, Finn spends the whole movie with a thing that he needs to tell Rey, and then he never tells her, and we only know now because J.J. Abrams mentioned it in a Q&A what that thing is. You know, it just, there's just a lot that just seems...
Bleh. I understand everything you're saying, and I know that you're right.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do not think of these films as... After the first three... I do not think of the remaining...
When you say the first three, which... Would
he means four through six.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, real, it's I mean, hard, real but... Star Wars, real Empire Strikes Back, and real Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
The first three films.
Yes.
The second three are essentially useless, except for part two, where our beautiful friend Rena Owen is Tawn Wee.
But I don't take
and these last three have been thoroughly enjoyable. These final three have been thoroughly enjoyable for me. I'd say maybe this one is the least of the three, of the final three. But they occupy such an outsized position in the culture.
Yes.
They are given much, much, much more weight and attention than so many other superior examples of cinema.
Yes.
That I want often when I talk about them to say, okay, Star Wars, just go over there and sit down for a second. Just the grown-ups calm down, be quiet, let the grown-ups talk. And that's, you know...
Richard Brody had a tweet today where he said that Spielberg and Lucas have basically spent their entire careers taking the grandeur of old Hollywood, of the epic scale of vintage Hollywood, and shrinking it down to the television of their youth.
Yeah.
And that's not unfair.
Maybe.
It doesn't apply to every single movie, obviously. I wouldn't
always put Spielberg in there.
I don't think it applies to every Spielberg movie or necessarily even every Lucas movie, but I think they're responsible for a lot of that.
But I sometimes feel like, as a person whose job it is to write and talk about film, that I simply don't want to give it more air. It gets too much. It's taking up too much. And that's why I'm kind of happy that these films are over for now.
Yes.
Because...
Well,
I need a break, and I think movies need more space to be different.
But look, when do we ever talk about this, like on this show, when there isn't a new one in theaters?
But I can't go a day on social media without hearing about
something. No, I know. You're right. No, I agree.
About a movie that came out 3 years ago, 5 years ago.
Right.
35 years.
But now is the moment where we have to talk about it, and then we can put it on the shelf and discuss it again.
I'm just saying that, like, even when it's time to talk about it,
I know, you feel fried.
I just think,
quit this again?
Yeah.
All right.
Didn't we already talk about this like 2 years
exactly.
ago?
Exactly. Yeah. Let's hold off. We'll get to spoilers at the very end.
Spoilers
we'll
give you, after I say goodbye.
We'll give you a warning so you'll know when to stop listening if you don't want to know things.
Yeah, I have so many spoilers.
Little Women, Little Women, Little Women, okay. Little Women, Little Women, Little Women.
My favorite film of 2019?
Top five.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's in my top five too.
Oh,
yeah, because yeah.
Oh, I okay. There wasn't even a horse in this movie.
Listeners, Dave White does not form sentimental attachments to cinema unless there is a war horse or a touring horse, and they are suffering, but they are in love with the boy.
That boy loved that horse.
He super loved that horse. And the horse loved him back.
The horse loved him back.
And then
yes.
he comes back at the end and they love each other so
I
much.
I felt the same way when I saw the play. And it was like, I was like, those puppets holding that horse are making that horse love that boy.
Yeah.
And that boy loves the horse and the puppeteer's back.
Gary's right.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds so good.
There's not even a horse in this movie. And I was routinely choking up.
Yes.
Like throughout the film at things that weren't even meant to evoke tears. I'm just like, this is so beautiful and everything is so lovely and perfect.
It's
and
a very cozy movie.
Oh my God. It might be the coziest movie. Like, and I've seen all the Little Women's.
It is the platonic ideal of cozy.
I have seen the 1990s version.
Yeah. 94.
Claire Danes doing the Claire Danes cry.
Uh-huh.
I have seen the one from the, what was it, 50s? 40s?
49.
The 49 one with Elizabeth Taylor being amazing. I've seen the one with
33.
George Cukor's Catherine Hepburn, 1933, where she tells Aunt March to go to the Dickens. I love Little Women. I've never read the book, but I love these movies.
I've started the book.
I'll tell you something. I read all the girl books when I was a kid.
Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret?
Oh, yeah. I read Deanie. All the girl books when I was a kid. I read Are You
Tales Before
I read all
Nothing.
The Judy Blume books for girls. I read all the Little House books. I read, you name it.
Nancy
it
Drew.
When I was in middle school.
Katie Keene.
When I was in middle school, Judy Blume's book, Forever.
Hot stuff.
That was the book about being horny and
doing it.
And being a teenager and doing it.
Yes, that got passed around.
The virginity. Oh,
it we got didn't have an internet. We had forever.
Do you know? It got passed around. The girls would pass it to the girls.
Oh, no.
And they would say, you can't read this, you're a boy.
They easy bake ovened you all over
they
again.
They easy bake ovened me for sure.
Oh.
When I was a small child in my neighborhood, there was a gang of boys and one girl. And she had an easy bake oven. And I needed to play with it so badly. I needed to play with the easy bake oven with her. And she would say to me, no, no boys are touching my easy bake oven. All of you are dirty. And I'd be like, I'm not. I'm very clean. I take a bath every night. And I don't run around in the dirt with these other hooligans. I'm inside reading a book. Please let me bake.
But the book you were not reading was Little Women.
Yeah. So in spite of all of that, Forever. Forever comes out. Forever comes out, and they're like, no, you're not reading that. You can't read that. That's for us. This is for us. I was like, girls know secrets that I don't.
That's why I read Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Yeah. Girls know secrets what was going on.
That I don't. So I went to the library, and I checked it out.
Mm.
I read it. And I could read it at home. No one cared what I was reading at home. I could have read the most, like, pornographic whatever at home, and no one would have noticed.
My mother caught me reading Blubber, and she was like, I don't think you should be reading that.
Oh, really?
Well, your mom was a teacher, so she was tuned into that.
She was too aware.
She was a little too aware.
Yeah.
And it had some bad swears in it.
Well, yeah. Judy Blume.
Yeah.
She gave us kids what we needed.
She told it like a T.I. is.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
There wasn't no soup in me.
So in all of that, in spite of the fact that I read every girl book.
Yes, not Little Women.
I didn't read Little Women. I don't know why, how I missed it.
I remember that my sister had to read it for like in sixth grade or something, and it was just torture. Like, she was so miserable reading it.
Why?
She just, for some reason, was just not having it at all. What?
Which sister?
Cheeky.
Cheeky.
She was just like, all she was complaining about Little Women and what a drag it was. And, blah, 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 blah. And so it sort of, I just thought, well, I'm not reading that.
Did Victoria like to read books as a young person?
No.
Could that have been a part of the problem?
She was sporty. She played high school and college
So you
volleyball.
Read Little Women?
I did not realize. I'm reading it now.
She didn't
actually.
Just throw it to you. And...
No. But I could tell she was so miserable trying to read it that I just thought, okay, I'm not. That's off the list.
So anyway,
I've seen all the movies.
I've seen all the movies, and oh god, this one.
This is
it's not just another rehash of the story. I know I've been reading the complaints from people. Oh, it's just another version of Little Women. No, it's a new. It's a new take.
In 100 years of talking pictures, we've had 4 big ones.
Yeah.
This is the 4th like major one.
Listen,
oh, so many
people will complain on the internet.
How many Hamlets are there? Come on.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
This is...
I mean, there's 9 Star Warses.
There are.
This is a fresh
take.
Little Women.
Yes.
Why don't you...
So Greta Gerwig wrote and directed this, and... The thing about Little Women is that it's always been its own origin story. It's always been the story of a writer figuring out that she is a writer and using her own life as the grist for her own mill, you know?
Yes.
And so what Gerwig does in telling this story is that she begins with Joe, the writer, in New York City, selling her pulp stories and realizing that, you know, she has a story to tell that is about her own life. And so in flashback, we find out about what that is. So the story hops around in time, but in a way that you can always follow.
Yeah.
And I think that really kind of captures her as an artist, sort of figuring out her own past and figuring out her own source material, basically. And also in doing so, and again, I got to go, when I go back and read the book, I'll know if this is all new stuff or if she just sort of found it in the text. She pays more attention to the other 3 sisters than any other major adaptation
for sure.
of this film.
Yeah, absolutely.
We get more Meg, you know, even though like her life is about domesticity and, you know, being married and raising children, but she's got stuff to deal with, which we learn about. We get more about Beth. So she's not just this tragic saintly waif like we, you know, she is established
who exists
as a character.
To die,
yes. And we especially get a lot more Amy, who has been very easy to sort of slough off as like a flibbertigibbet.
Oh my God.
And she's got her own stuff going on. And dang it, when she gets married at the end of the movie, in other versions, it's kind of like, whoa, where'd that come from? This feels a little creepy. This is like, I get it. I have seen the relationship grow. We've actually given them scenes along the way. And now this makes sense.
This was clearly your favorite movie because just watching you get so excited talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
I
watched it last night on the screener that we got sent, and every 10 minutes I'd think, I have to go see this in the screen. I have to go see this in a movie
theater. I'll see it again.
I have to go see this in a movie theater. I have to sit right in the center, near to the front. I need to be enveloped in all of this. It is, let me just talk about the filmmaking.
Yes.
Who is the cinematographer? Because I know that this person did High Life and Clouds of Sils Maria and Personal Shopper and all these other gorgeous looking films.
And that helps the way it's photographed, helps with the jumping back and forth in time.
Right.
Because that was, you liked that, and I had a hard time watching it. I watched it on a screener too.
Yeah.
Yorick Lasseau is the
It is so beautiful, and the production design is so lush.
And the Alexandre Desplat score is one of his best ones in
ages.
It's
like a really old fashioned score that just like emphasizes exactly what it needs to when it needs to do it.
The movie feels like it feels old-fashioned the best way, but it also feels very contemporary.
This was my favorite part about it is they don't what version did we watch a couple weeks ago?
The
49.
The 1949 one. Yeah.
So in this version, and that's why I was kind of hesitant to watch it because I don't actually like period pieces that much.
Uh-huh.
Get out of this house.
Relax.
You don't like a hoop skirt?
Yeah. Because I just keep looking at the costumes and I stop paying attention to what's happening.
Right.
But in this movie, and I guess it's not a spoiler, they don't use that continental accent that you're used to movies from.
The Mid-Atlantic
sort of like prim and proper accent. Most noticeably when Timothy Chalamet speaks. And I was like, oh, they're just talking like regular people.
Yeah.
And Laura Dern especially, like she's just coming across as this like sweet mother, and it's not. I find that accent distracting when you watch an old movie because you're just sort of like, they're not using a British accent and they're not using.
Oh, how do you do, Ali?
Yes. Yeah, fine. That's just fine.
Right.
Like,
that's just a period. That's something that existed in American film from the 30s
till for that matter, telling Aunt March to go to the Dickens.
Go to the Dickens. Right.
Yes. It's very
like,
middle-aged.
No one speaks like that in this movie, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, did they talk like that in Massachusetts?
They did not.
No, they probably didn't.
They did not.
And,
they
but
talk
going
like
back
your
to the,
family.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to go down to Florida. Sick of the snow. But, yeah, it was photographed so well that, and that helps jump back forth and jump. Understand the jumping back and forth,
right?
Because it took me about 20 minutes to figure that out, and I was like, oh.
I love that early on we get a shot that is clearly meant to be an homage to a famous shot of Greta Gerwig in Frances Ha.
yes. There is so much directorial voice going on here that it's the kind of movie that when I'm done and I finish watching it and I think, I need to be friends with Greta Gerwig. Like, that's how personal it feels.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel just like an adaptation that someone handed her to do.
Yeah.
This feels like, no, this is the thing I want to do right now.
Yeah.
This is the story I want to tell right now. I want to talk about the historical, you know, situation with women and how they, boy, do they talk about money in this movie. How women were allowed to make money, how they were allowed to exist, how they were allowed to be legally, you know, defined as citizens.
Yes.
You know, and because it is a film where it's mostly women talking to women, they're just speaking frankly about this stuff with each other. It's not like they're saying to a guy, "You men just don't understand." And here is happening.
There is
us.
That great scene.
It does happen.
Amy does that to Laurie, but those scenes always exist in a way in which it doesn't feel like someone is telling another person a thing they already both know.
Correct.
Which is hard to do, but I think she threads that needle beautifully.
Right.
I want to talk about Florence Pugh.
Do we think Florence Pugh? I'm gonna go back a little bit here.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember when the first time you watched Barbara Streisand on the Judy Garland show?
Mm.
It was Barbara Streisand's first appearance on television, and Judy Garland brought her on.
Yeah,
and they sang a duet.
Yes,
and you can see Judy Garland adoring Barbara Streisand, but more importantly, you can see Barbara Streisand adoring Barbara Streisand. There was this moment. You see this happening. She is so...
I didn't see that coming.
She is so full of the pleasure of being great that you feel it and you see it on her face. You get this feeling like she's looking at you and telling you, "Hello, everyone. I'm going to become the greatest singer of the latter half of the 20th century. Here I am. You're welcome."
Hey, Mr. Arnstein.
I sometimes wonder when I watch Florence Pugh, because I've seen her now in several things since she sort of blew up. She's so unnervingly, distractingly good in a variety of projects.
Did you see Fighting With My Family?
Absolutely, I did. And so, like, she's had this wild year.
Yeah.
Fighting With My Family.
Midsummer.
Where she plays a wrestler, and she's amazing.
Yeah.
Midsummer, where she's amazing. And here, where she steals every single moment that she's in by just, like, being a force of nature. And I think, does Florence Pugh understand how good she is? She does. And she's trying to tell all of us that she is. This is what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, she's astonishing in this. And yeah, I mean, even if you weren't coming off of those other two performances, which are great and completely different from what she's doing here and completely different from each other. Yeah, she is. You're right. It's like when they're all on screen together, you're looking at her.
I'm looking at everyone because usually they're rolling around on the floor, like wrestling or whatever, but like, or leaping through the air in Meg's theatricals.
Joe's. Every Little Women has the scene of like the Marmy in front of the fireplace and the girls gathered around her as they read the letter from the father who's off of the Civil War.
They're just draped on each other.
So there's all these. They're grouped together quite often. Yeah. But I'm just saying, when they are, I'm always looking at Florence Pugh.
Even just like talking about it, I feel like I'm drinking a hot cup of cocoa.
One thing that did take me out.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's that?
Every time someone referred to Saoirse Ronan or Saoirse Ronan referred to herself as unattractive.
Yeah,
and I'm
well.
Like, I mean, once it was a comedy bit, like Florence Pugh, you know, after she cuts her hair.
You're one beauty.
And I'm like, look at her.
That they say that to Winona Ryder in the 94 version.
This gorgeous
as well.
Person. Look at her. So, like.
And they say that, and they're saying it about Winona Ryder in 1994
exactly,
also. So,
exactly.
Come on.
So, that was my only.
Movie ugly is like gay fat, you know? It's
right.
Like, yeah. You,
right.
No, come on.
Yeah. Whenever they would call someone on Will and Grace fat in the 90s, 2000s, no. You'd be like, where is it?
Where's the fat?
I don't
see
that.
Who are we talking about?
I'll show you some fat right here.
Yeah.
Even in this conversation, I actually want to see it again in a theater because I watched it on a screener and I actually think that prevented me from liking it even more.
I got to see it on this.
Wait until Christmas is over.
You saw it
on
we just can stroll on into an empty theater to. Check it out.
I hope people go see this. I'm already worrying. Like,
no, I don't mean theaters are going to be empty for this movie. I think
no,
like,
I know.
2 weeks in, you can go to the movie in the morning.
It
and
opens
like
Christmas Day.
It opens Christmas Day. It has not like gotten a ton of awards traction. And
why is that?
I don't know. But there's
did
like,
they screen it too late? Did lists go out too late?
I don't know. But there's certainly a narrative happening where like a lot of, where people are saying. I've talked to a lot of men who are not putting it in their screener list or on their stack of screeners to watch
because
they just think, oh, it's a period piece about girls, you know.
Hey guys, stop being dumb.
Yeah, dummies.
Oh, it's,
watch this movie.
It's just
we haven't even talked about Laura Dern yet.
She's a goddess. What's to talk about?
Yeah. And again, like, couldn't be more different than Marriage Story.
Right.
But yeah, she's amazing. I saw this at a screening. It was a critic screening on the Sony lot, and it was literally a thing where, like, everybody left the room while Bibbs and I were still sitting in our seats, sobbing.
Oh, William Bibbiani.
So, you know, yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it again.
And now...
in a movie theater.
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
You guys.
I'll start. Cats. You gotta see it. You gotta see this movie. This is the reason I'm here today. Cats. Since seeing this movie, I have been bothering all of my friends via text message and just sending them the word cats with a period. Not all caps. Just, you know, capital C-A-T-S, period. People are like, please stop.
I'm going to read Gary's review because I think it's valuable.
Gary did write a review.
And
it's gaining some traction.
It is some of the best critical writing I've read this year.
It's been reposted and shared.
I quote, I just saw the movie Cats. What happens in this movie? What is a Jellicle? How come some of the cats wear clothes? Is this the closest I will get to seeing Idris Elba naked? How come all the cats have really hot asses? You're all thinking it. Did someone have to tell Taylor Swift that she's referencing the Studio 54 Moon and Spoon, or did she already know? Am I dead? Has Judi Dench seen the movie she's in? Did she and Ian McKellen, I'll do it if you do it, dare each other to be in this movie? Should I take my temperature? Why does it all make sense and seem okay just because Jennifer Hudson is singing? Is Thanos in this movie? Which level did I park on? Is the score supposed to sound like Mannheim Steamroller? Did they make this movie using cameras? Is this movie an F or an A+? Can it be both? I just saw the movie Cats. What happens in the movie Cats?
I'm going to tell you what happens in the movie Cats.
Cats.
Here's what happens in the movie Cats.
Cats.
First, there's a nighttime sky with clouds.
Cats.
And one of those clouds
is
a cat.
Yeah.
That is the first moment where you sit in the theater and you think to yourself, oh, look, it's a cat.
I'm in the right theater.
There are so many There are so many cats in this movie.
So many cats, they called it cats.
Then what happens is you do notice immediately that all of the cats have astonishing buttocks.
Yes. And they're just presenting.
But they do not have anuses.
And they're presenting, and you're like, that cat's got a really fine ass.
Well, they're dancers, you know.
Sure.
Right.
But, you know, if you've seen Monica Mana, you know what you should be seeing when you see a rear view like that, and you're not seeing it.
Yeah. It's distracting.
Then one of them has a top hat. This is problematic. Top hats are bad. And if a person in a movie is wearing a top hat, unless it is in the film top hat.
Yes, I was going to say, there's an exception.
Well, this is a bad person.
Are you talking about the magical cat?
Yes.
Idris Elba also wears a hat. Cat.
He doesn't wear a top hat, though. He wears a weird fedora.
Yes.
He
wears a hipster hat.
Yeah.
Right. As Ingu Kang pointed out, the problem with this movie isn't that it has a bunch of people jumping around dancing like cats. The problem with this movie is that the love interest is a magician.
The cats begin to undulate.
Boy, howdy.
They begin to bump and grind and rub on each other and sort of hump the air.
Yeah. There's a lot of air humping.
There's a lot of air humping.
And a lot of erect tails.
There's a
lot of, like, taking the tail through your legs and holding the tail in front of you.
Yeah.
Like it's a microphone. This happens on more than one occasion.
Yeah. They sing about themselves. Here's what the movie's about.
Well, you're skipping the pillowcase.
Am I?
There's a cat in a pillowcase thrown out of a moving car.
I'm fixing to get to that.
Okay, well, that's before they get to this.
I'm fixing to tell you the story.
Okay, fine.
Okay. Here's the story of the cats. Everyone just shut up and let me tell the story of the cats.
Okay, T.S. Eliot, get on with it.
Cats.
Oh, by the way, T.S. Eliot, complete racist and anti-Semite.
Oh, good.
Just FYI. Okay, so we begin with a little baby kitten in a bag. She gets thrown into the alley with all the other cats.
Digitally.
She is played by Francesca Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
She's very sweet. She's a great dancer, because that's what her job is when she's not being in Cats.
Yes.
I don't know if she's supposed to be an actress or a singer, too, but sure.
She
as
has
much
been,
as she needed to do that in this film, she accomplished it.
She has been directed by the awful Tom Hooper to... to have the widest of wide-eyed, disingenuous, what?
Not disingenuous. She's
okay,
a naive little kitten.
Ingenuous, then, whatever.
She doesn't know what's happening in the world. She needs the cats to tell her.
It's distracting. It's not her fault. Like, but she just
you hate actual cats in general, and I think this has colored your perception.
That's not the issue
of the
here.
Singing, dancing. Erotically horny cats.
Not the issue here. She's given one note to play, and that note is agape.
So she.
I also hate cats, but this movie is mesmerizing.
It is mesmerizing. Here's what happens next. She gets introduced to all the cats, and there are so many of them, and they dance and they sing, and they even throw out the names of various cats, including one named Alonzo.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. They've all the cats.
He's the queer lion.
all the cats have an introduction.
Do your listeners know what the queer lion means?
Have we talked about that?
Probably at some point.
Alonzo went to the Venice Film Festival a few years ago, and he was on the queer lion jury.
Yes.
Because the
golden lion is
golden
the main
lion,
prize they give out.
But the queer lion is the top queer
Every
film.
Every time somebody says
so
queer
you were
lion,
on the jury,
you didn't make the
and sound. When you came home, we decided amongst friends that we would refer to you sometimes, whenever we felt like it, as Alonzo Duralde, the queer lion. And then you would always do this cute little thing where you would go, and throw your little claw hand.
Yeah.
And it's adorable, and I never want you to stop.
All the frickin' cats in this movie have an introductory number to the point where every time somebody says, oh, who are you? Or let me introduce myself, I would just sink further into my seat and think, oh, God, another terrible, terrible song where they introduce themselves.
That's all it is.
That's the whole show.
It's an entire movie of cats introducing their names, and then one of them goes off in a UFO.
Yeah.
End of movie.
One gets picked to go to kitty heaven.
Right.
I will continue.
Oh, please.
Cats.
You meet all the cats, and they sing all the songs. Each cat gets a song about who they are and what kind of cat they are. And then sometimes that involves mice showing up and dancing and singing and cockroaches.
With human faces.
Cockroaches with human faces.
Amazing.
Alternate title.
Amazing.
And then they get eaten by Rebel Wilson.
Then they get eaten by Rebel Wilson. Like, she picks them up and puts them in her mouth and goes chomp, chomp, chomp on the cockroach people. Jason Derulo shows up.
And by the way, that cockroach thing, that happens within the first 15 minutes of
the
movie.
Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, kapam.
But it's Jason Derulo's time to sing.
You're watching.
He sings better than pretty much anybody in the movie.
Yeah, and no, like, I was expecting if it was Jason Derulo that they were gonna his voice. That's his whole thing.
Yeah, it is. But he's a good still good. He's a good singer, even without all that, like, processing. He was on Wendy Williams recently, a few days ago. And she tried her best to, like, take him down a few pegs, but also to flirt with him. Like, she was, it was this weird combination.
She was nagging him?
Sort of, kind of. But he is just, he's the Florence Pugh of what he does, because he sat on that couch like, yeah, I'm Jason Derulo.
Almost like he sat on that couch like a cat.
Yeah. And he,
did he sprawl over, they, like, the top part of it?
They edited out, they CGI'd out all of his Instagram glory.
But here's the thing. They CGI out everyone's bits.
Right.
Yeah, all the, like, boobs is all that are left.
Yeah.
On Weekend Update, they made the joke that Jason Derulo complained that they took out his bulge. And he said, even stranger, they gave it to Dame Judi Dench.
They frolic about, and they dance, and they sing, and they... And
all nimbly pimply.
We're introduced to James Corden, who will not give it a rest.
Oh, God.
And then...
He's outside now. He wants to be on this podcast.
Yeah.
He needs all the jobs.
He's blocking traffic on Santa Monica Boulevard right now. Doing
with a Keurig coffee thing, yeah.
The...
Is
then
someone
comes,
caroling at your door? It might be James Corden.
It might be James Corden. Idris Elba shows up, and he's very bad and mean, and he makes cats disappear like Thanos.
Right.
And you don't know why.
And he can make himself disappear.
And he can do that, and he's a very bad cat.
And that's as close as the movie has to a plot, by the way.
And so then they dance and sing around some more. They especially dance in front of a cafe that advertises a large variety of sandwiches. And every time they pass by the little neon bit that says a large variety of sandwiches, Gary and I looked at each other and we said, a large variety of sandwiches.
It's my favorite part of the movie.
It's my favorite thing in life. And so I was appreciative of that inclusion.
Because we're in this sort of fake, is that Piccadilly Circus? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. But like with signs that say things like Catsino.
That's right. You go gamble at the Catsino.
Yeah.
You drink Piperitis.
Oh, yeah, yes, 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 yes. I forgot about that one.
You go to the milk bar.
Yeah.
But you don't go into the milk bar, and then you'll be in the Clockwork Orange.
I was going to say, like, the Corova milk one?
So then comes Judi Dench. And she shows up, and she's Grandma old Deuteronomy.
Old Deuteronomy.
The granny, the grandmother lady cat. Mm-hmm. And she has the job of picking which of the cats is the most deserving to go to something called the Heaviside Lair.
Yes.
Which is kitty heaven.
Yes.
And what happens in kitty heaven is you get a new kitty life. You know, cats have 9 lives, blah, blah, blah. And so if you have had a particularly rough kitty existence, then you're most likely going to be the one who gets to go to kitty heaven and have the new life.
Now, is old Deuteronomy wearing a fur coat, or is that just more old Deuteronomy?
What's she talking about?
Like, she's wearing...
I think she's wearing a fur coat.
She's wearing a fur coat.
Wearing clothes. Yeah, some of the cats
wear
clothes.
Some of them
wear
clothes.
Yeah.
Like, and some of them wear clothes. Idris Elba wears clothes, and then all of a sudden just takes his clothes off.
And, yeah. And then at one point, Rebel Wilson unzips her outer cat fur layer
and
has another
underneath.
Cat fur layer underneath that has clothes on.
Yeah, that part's insane.
It's great. And then...
You gotta see it.
The tap dancing cat wears clothes and tap shoes.
Yeah, and suspenders.
And that is, in traditional musical standards, that is the greatest, really, part of the film.
Yes, because they're tap dancing, and also, even though like White Christmas, none of this movie is ever really outside.
There was a moment where I started thinking about the choreography number.
Yeah, there you go.
I tried to do it.
They're doing choreography.
Vera Ellen million miles an hour tap.
But there's a point where it feels like they're tap dancing along the railroad line,
and it's like out in a big railroad yard somewhere. So it's like, so ostensibly we're outside in the daytime, which we almost never are in this movie, so that was a moment of a breath of fresh air, and there was the possibility that a train could come along and run them all over, which I wouldn't have complained about in the slightest.
No.
So here comes Dame Judy, and she is going to pick the cat.
Yes.
And you know it's going to be Jennifer Hudson, because Jennifer Hudson has been kicked around and abused and is always crying.
And the other cats are not nice to her for reasons that are never explained.
I think her character's name is Grizabella. I think the character of Grizabella is meant to be sort of a cat who has lived.
She was a glamour cat.
A glamour cat, they call her. Yeah. I don't know what that means.
No, the movie doesn't tell you.
But I don't really want to, I don't really want to entertain the ideas of what that means. And so, anyway, she's very sad and she cries a lot. And when she sings Memory, she cries the entire song. Which is, at first I thought, oh no, it's going to be this over-singing moment. But she legitimately moved me.
Mm.
As did Francesca Hayward when she sang her little song about wanting to be wanted.
Because
she was thrown away in a bag as a little kid.
That's the new song.
Was that the new song?
T. Swift and Taylor Swift song was it.
No.
The song that Francesca Hayward is singing is the one that Taylor Swift and Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote.
Okay. Taylor Swift sings a song that was already in the musical.
Yes, she sings the Macavity
song. I have never seen the musical.
Me neither.
I did.
Yes. Dave saw it with tourists and school children at London's West End.
A number.
In London, in that round theater, and the cats would jump off stage and frolic up the aisles, and they would swing down from the balcony, and they would do all kinds of things. And at the end of the show, I thought, that was fun. And I know it's a musical that people like to mock and make fun of and say is stupid and bad, but you go see Cats, you're going to have a good time.
It is stupid.
You
and
go
bad.
See Cats the movie, and you're going to have a good time.
You're going to have a weird time.
It is good. It is a stupid and bad musical that has been directed for the screen by the maker of one of the worst screen musicals I've ever seen in my entire life, Tom Hooper, who gave us Les Miserables.
Oh, yeah.
It stinks. This had all the earmarks of a disaster. And oh no, right again. I didn't even think the Jennifer Hudson stuff really worked. I thought she was. Where did I say this recently? She sings like she's got diarrhea and constipation at the same time.
You're so mean.
I'm sorry. I think she's great. I'm generally a fan. I think she deserves her Dreamgirls Oscar because she kills that number. But in this one, and I don't know if it's... I mean, partially is the whole thing of her head doesn't quite seem to be the right size compared to her cat body. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of problems with perspective in this entire movie.
Apparently, they're sending
out
new special effects.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. Yeah, no, that's the good luck.
Some paws that didn't look
good. Yeah, apparently you see Judy Dench's wedding ring or something.
That's the problem.
Oh, I saw that, but I think it's just Louis. Yeah,
she's a married cat.
She's married to Mr. Deuteronomy.
The big honking issue with this movie is you could have either gone full Babe and just had a movie about cats that happen to sing.
Yeah.
Or you could sort of try and stay true to the theatrical roots and have the elaborate makeup and the leg warmers and the whole cat outfit thing. Instead, we have landed on this creepy middle ground where we have Idris Elba's face floating onto this human proportioned cat form on sets that are larger so that the cats seem cat size, even though they slink about like human beings and have human fingers and toes and wear clothes and this movie is an assault.
The thing is it bad
of excitement?
Is it bad that it's something that is an assault? I understand that I am not here as a professional film critic, because I am not, but as an audience member, this movie has stayed with me for 4 days.
Exactly.
And I'm serious. Can a movie be an F and an A plus at the same time? It's not even like one of those movies like The Apple where like, oh, this is terrible. Let's riff on it the whole time. I was completely hypnotized during this entire movie. I turned to Dave at one point. I said, I've been sitting in this chair for 9 days. I lost sense of time. I lost sense of perspective.
I took a nap. I was so bored by the proceedings.
What kind of nap?
A kitty nap.
A cat nap?
A cat nap.
You took a little cat nap?
I took a nap during the middle, and then like you get to the end of the movie, and like the cat selection, the Jellicle selection. You are not my Jellicle selection. The Jellicle selection is happening. You think, oh, good, movie's over. We can go now, right? Oh,
No, you guys stick around for this soliloquy. Judy Dench has
a 20-minute explanation of cats to give you.
Dame Judy comes along at the end and tells you all about...
A cat is not a dog.
Here are the cats that we have just shown you.
Very good, Judy Dench.
Thank you. Yeah. Here are the cats that we have just shown you. They were all cats.
In conclusion,
cats. Like the, she finishes the end of like a stanza of what she's saying, and then you think, okay, well she's done talking. Nope, she keeps going, and then she gets
interrupted by talking by like a this sort of like finale dance move.
Yep.
By everyone on this.
But
this
she is. There's another quatrain.
And then there's another like, oh, she's turning back towards us. And she's not done. Say. Incredible.
I loved every freaked out minute of this. I had such a wonderful time watching this bizarre concoction. I want everyone within the sound of my voice to go see this movie on a big screen because it's not going to last in theaters for very long. I think it's tanking this weekend. It is tanking, right?
Yes.
And the thing is, a lot of people, like, you know, you can joke about it.
It's not going to be the same on television.
And people, you know, are saying like, oh, I'm going to, you know, maybe take some substances and go see this movie. I don't recommend it.
You don't need to.
I think you
need to. The movie did that for you.
I was off for the rest of the day.
And don't go, if you're going to go, don't go and be all loud and yelling and laughing and
guffaw.
Be misbehaving. Behave like a normal person in the theater. Enjoy it fully.
And don't go ready to hate on it. Because, I mean, listen, the article I read before I went to see it was the LA Times aggregated. The headline was, the 16 worst things said about cats in all these different reviews.
The critics were looking to outdo each other on that one because everyone wants their moment of Twitter.
And the thing is, like, you know, yeah. Just as a person who goes to the movies, like, you can go to this movie and be ready to hate on it. Sure, that's fine. But if you go and just sort of be like, I mean, what you read is just sort of like, what I wrote is just like, I feel like Madeline Kahn in Clue. Like, I can't fully explain it. Like,
The screening that I went to was pretty silent. Like, people were not goofing on it. It was, as somebody later described it, it was like the audience seeing Springtime for Hitler for the first time. They were just sort of like...
Yeah, that's the face I made during the entire movie.
I would say this. If you want to go to this movie to goof on it, you should. And you it deserves it. But... You're right. There will be people in the theater who either are like inveterate Broadway people or people with very low standards who are loving it and having a good time. Don't ruin it for them. Do what Dave and I did when we went to see Crash, not the good one, the one that won the Academy Award, however. We punched each other in the leg whenever something funny would happen because we did not want to be like, ah, in front of like the clearly people who'd paid, bought tickets to take this movie seriously.
You and I, Alonzo Durrell, they are not seeing eye to eye on this film because you don't like it.
No, I do not.
I just think it's hypnotic.
I find it unspeakably tedious.
Bonkers and... That is a function of cinema. That is one function of cinema, to be wild. Now,
it's wild,
but it's so boring at the same time. If it were truly unhinged, I'd be down for it. Yes, go ahead.
I'm going to get there. If it had been given over to a director of
talent,
of
substance,
of true weirdness.
Could you imagine Ken Russell's cats?
Ken Russell, David Lynch. Who help me out here?
Julian Temple. I don't know.
You know, like
Claire Denis cats.
Stan Brackages.
Somebody, cats. Yes, exactly. Like if you had given it to a true weirdo,
yeah,
it would be an entirely different film, and it would be even more bonkers. But I can't speculate on what that is.
Sure.
You know, all I know is that this thing that we were given is quite a sight to see.
I'll say this.
And I encourage all of you to see it.
For a major studio movie that is inherently, clearly trying to play it safe,
yeah,
it's still this bananas.
It's a big swing that just keeps swinging.
Yeah.
I texted a friend of mine the other day after I was annoying him by saying the word cats over and over again. I just said, cats is a beautiful fever dream / nightmare cocaine sex LSD death march. You gotta see it.
It is unique. I would be more excited about telling people to go immerse themselves in the wackadoo of it all if I just weren't so bored by so much.
I know you were bored. Sorry. I was
there,
not.
There is a moment.
I don't care for Andrew Lloyd Webber. That's also a problem, I guess.
There is a moment.
Oh, his songs are not good.
No.
Yeah.
Where Ian McKellen does look at Judi Dench. And that's where I was like, they're looking at each other like, I told you this is going to be weird. Remember when you called me and you said, I've been offered this, and like, were you offered it too? And I'll do it if you. Like, they're like, we're this movie together.
And they are, I'd say, less culpable than most. Right. Like, Ian McKellen is giving it his all. And
so is Judi Dench.
And so is Judi Dench. But they're stuck with this material, but they are certainly, like,
so
trying.
Is Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson is trying, but I think
when she sings
that. I think she needs. That's the difference when you're being directed by, like, Bill Condon, right, who can say, that's awesome, give me an 8 and you're at a 10. As opposed to Tom Hooper, who's like, okay, sure, great, next.
When she sings that song, I was like, okay, this movie makes sense now.
Did it make sense?
But then she stopped singing, and I was like, this movie doesn't make any sense.
All right, we got some letters.
We do.
Give me a large variety of sandwiches.
I would especially enjoy pastrami.
With a side of potato salad.
Do you have a knish?
This is from Ryan. In the last 2 years, I have gotten married and become a stepfather to two terrific girls, quit my job to get a master's degree in mental health counseling, changed my registration designation from Republican to Democrat, and started listening to the Linoleum Knife podcast. It has been a transformative time, to say the least. I've always loved the movies, but I give the two of you a lot of credit for opening my mind to enjoying more artful and international cinema, sometimes to the dismay of my wife. Largely because of you, my horizons have expanded, and I'm able to appreciate all movies more than I ever have before. I'm not quite to the level of Bread Factory or Satan Tango, but I have spent many blissful hours sitting with your recommendations. I recently found a worksheet that my middle school stepdaughter was given. She commented that her favorite thing was, quote, watching a movie on Friday nights with her family. Even writing that puts a lump of joy in my throat.
No.
Honestly, your perspective has helped inform mine, and I have no doubt that it's made me a better counselor, partner, and father. If cinema is an empathy machine, the two of you are keys to the ignition.
Oh.
Well, we can only disappoint you. And we will.
Ignition remix.
But thank you.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
Here are some new Apple Podcast reviews.
We have some 5-star reviews.
Five stars.
If you'd like us to read them on the show, leave a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts.
This is from Paisley YYY.
Okay.
As a teenager who has just recently found a love for movies, it's nice to see two critics who are able to appreciate good art films and classics while being able to enjoy dumb action movies without expecting to be anything they are not. Not to mention the great dynamic between these two. They make an hour-long discussion of movies you probably haven't seen. Very interesting. Super Bjorn Bjorn says, a married couple that are film reviewers share their opinions on cinema, often funny, full of married life digressions, some complaining, but always entertaining. They have a depth of knowledge and a love of film that aids their thoughtful reviews. They are proudly totes on fleek. Also, they like cake. And Sandra Lewis.
No, we read that one already.
Oh, we did?
Yes, that's why I put in the header in all caps, read the first two reviews. We've already read the third one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now we're done.
No, we have a couple of things to talk about. First of all, we have a Patreon.
Yeah, we do.
At patreon.com/linoleumknife. Treat yourself this holiday season and get more stuff from us.
Yeah, you get more things, more podcasts, more items.
Yes, we have. We do three other podcasts every week for our subscribers. Yeah, LKTV, a podcast of the television.
Yep.
Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics.
Yes.
And Linoleum Nights, which Gary named.
I did name that.
You did name that.
Yeah. That was my idea.
Yeah, it was.
I want to go back to the Fruit Loops. I ate a whole box of it, and it ruined the rest of my day.
I'm sure it did.
It was horrible.
That's a lot to
don't ever do that.
That's what happens when you do that.
We appreciate the thought. Right. Anyway, patreon.com/linoleumknife. And just a quick reminder once again that this program is brought to you by our dear friends at thestardraft.com. Sign up before New Year's Eve and get in on that Gordon Gekko action. You could win $100 by drafting a team of celebrities who will earn points throughout Hollywood Awards season. It's like fantasy football, but with more Meryl Streep. So all you have to do is go to thestardraft.com. That's thestardraft.com. Sign up for December 31st. You'll be invited to join that Greed League. Accept the invite. Do the draft on Saturday, January 4th. And get your team together. Set up your lineup and make the magic happen.
Louis Garrel.
There you go.
Women.
And Fatma Muhammad. That's where it's all happening. Create a league. Invite your friends today. It's easy and it's all free at thestardraft.com. Thestardraft.com. Gary Cotty, can people find you? Do you want people to find you? Can you be found?
Find me. I live like three blocks down the street. There's no security code on the building.
Are you still not twittering?
Really don't want to do that.
No, don't do that. I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. Various stories of me playing my records and photographing my mustache.
Occasional thirst traps.
Occasional.
Yes.
A 1-3 selfie to something else ratio.
Okay.
At Gary Cotty, GaryCotti. And on Facebook for hard-hitting every man film reviews.
Yes.
It's so funny that you say Facebook.
Yeah, I said I'm 110 and you can find me on Facebook.
As always, this is our last show of the year, which is very exciting. But
the last of this show.
Of Linoleum Knife, yes. If you're a Patreon subscriber, there's more coming your way. One more fork, one more TV. But anyway, this is wrapping up Linoleum Knife. It's been another great year. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. Check out our friends on the internet. Go listen to all of Bibbs and Whitney's shows over on the Critically Acclaimed Network. Check out the Schmoes Know.
Are we going to talk about spoilers?
After this part.
Yeah.
Dennis Henin with Dennis Hensley. The Comics Canon. All Things Cozy. Deck the Hallmark. Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts and be like our lovely listeners tonight. Leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on the show. You can follow us at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And now, after Dave says the word that ends the show, we will then spoil the heck out of The Rise of Skywalker. So everybody have a great Christmas, a wonderful holiday season, a terrific new year. Wishing everybody all the best for 2020. Until we meet again.
Goodbye.
Okay.
But not yet goodbye.
All right. I'm so annoyed that they had to make Rey a Palpatine.
Why?
Because
I think it's fun.
Because in the previous movie, the idea was like she wasn't anybody. She wasn't related to anybody. She was just somebody who had the Force and who had these abilities. And so it's one thing if you make it a thing where it could happen to anybody. And again, the thing that J.J. Abrams revealed in that Q&A that Finn kept trying to tell Rey was that he is Force sensitive. That's why he could see things that were going on and he had certain capabilities. But like, you know, making the Force into something dynastic is as annoying as midichlorians was back in episode one.
I don't know what that word is.
In other words, like a thing that it's a family trait that gets passed down.
Like Alonso, what are midichlorians?
I know. I liked Rey better as just a regular person who was really good with the Force. And no, she has to be somebody's granddaughter. She was great with the Force. Anyway, so that annoyed me.
I think it makes sense. I think it's actually kind of bull. Oh, I can't swear on this one. Can I? I think it's kind of bull pucky that the Emperor comes back anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's like, that's.
And where'd that stadium full of Sith come from that were like, you know, cheering him on in that cellar?
Yeah, I think they did the wave.
One of them had the big foam rubber one, I know.
I liked all the Carrie Fisher's stuff.
It's hard not to watch it and get emotional.
Yeah.
I told Dave this on the way there. I was like, when Carrie Fisher's on screen, I'm probably going to cry. And I did most every time she was on the screen. And I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but...
You miss Carrie Fisher.
I was born in 1979, so those first three movies were just sort of like injected into this.
Already in the world.
And so, I don't remember a time where I didn't have those toys. I don't remember a time when I, you know, didn't know who Princess Leia was.
Sure. No. Right. It is... I mean, it's weird how... You have to wonder, like, if she were alive... You know, would they have just killed her after the last movie, or like, would they have not put Luke in this one so much because she would have been the person to? I don't know. That's an odd thing. But no, she's the stuff they have her doing is fine. I don't think there's any point in killing Leia except that Carrie Fisher died. Like that seems random and routine.
Right.
And I don't think there was any point in killing Kylo/Ben when you know he's vindicated by his dead father whom he murdered.
But don't those folks now, I don't know much about the ins and outs of this, but don't those folks that are super strong with the Force, they don't actually die? Because the thing is, they, like when Yoda dies in Return of the Jedi, he just sort of disappears.
They're called Force ghosts. Which that's what I've heard of them called. Maybe it's not official, but they've
ghost coast to coast.
They've never done as
true
much
space ghosts.
They've never done as much stuff as Luke does in this movie. Like he picks things up, he pulls an X-wing out of the swamp. Like
that part was cool.
Yeah, it's like you know he's being dead does not seem like much of an inconvenience for him. You know, And then to find out that Luke and Leia knew she was a Palpatine all along, but never told her about it. And then
that makes sense to me.
I don't know.
You don't want to. There's something about you that's dangerous, and I don't want to tell you.
I guess, but it also feels so Harry Potter, you know, and frankly, so Luke Skywalker. That like you've got this good and this evil side, and you must choose a path. And like, thanks Joseph Campbell, been there, done that. You know, I don't know. You keep saying, well, I don't really care about these movies. I don't either. I'm not invested in these movies, but I'm still annoyed by this one.
You're getting off. This is very different from you talking about Little Women.
Well, very exciting to me to watch you get all wound up about it.
I think they set up some cool stuff in episode 8.
I agree with that.
Including Rose Tico, and then they just like slough it off in this movie.
Harrison Ford
comes back.
Cool.
And for some reason, and I'm very curious about this, does not have a screen credit at all.
Nope.
No, I could see where I'm sure he was fine with that, and it was like a way to try and keep that a secret.
Right.
But that's not uncommon for like big stars making a little cameo thing or whatever where they'll do that.
I mean, it was one day at work for him.
Right? Totally. Yeah. But the thing about that was I started thinking, oh god, this is like the last episode of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, where everyone's going to come back for at least a moment. You know, like we're gonna fly in Phyllis and Rhoda to hang out at your apartment, but where they're not going to be in the office on the last day when everybody sings "It's a Long Way to Tipperary."
Hot take. So this part of the show is like people have already seen this movie.
Yes,
I think they should have left Chewbacca dead.
Okay, yes, thank you for bringing that up. You're
welcome.
That was such garbage, where it's like, oh no, he's blown up, and it's like, it's a movement.
My jaw dropped.
Yes.
I looked at David, and I was like, they killed Chewbacca.
And I was very upset.
In the first, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah. I was very upset. I was shocked, but I was like, but I kind of, I admired, like, okay, this is, it made me think, all right, episode 9, yes. Anything can happen. Right. And then 2 minutes later, oh no, other transport. What?
And the door opens and he's there, and I was like, and I looked to David, I was like, how did he escape that giant?
You know what I thought when he showed up alive? Yay, he's alive. Like, I was not.
And then, like, see,
I was like that too, but then I was disappointed because I was like, right. There's no stakes.
Yes. Nothing has any
because all because movies do this all the time. Like, it was one of the things that, one of the things that bugged me about Frozen 2 was like, you have the characters.
Frozen 2, they brought Chewbacca back in Frozen 2.
They brought, yes, Chewbacca showed the Frozen 2. I'm like, what the F? No, you have characters who are willing to make this like big sacrifice for the greater good, and it's this big heroic move, and then they don't have to.
Right.
Like, the heroic move happens anyway, but they also get to live because we have to have sequels. And so, like, in this one, we don't have sequels. You could kill Chewbacca. You could wipe C-3PO's memory, but you're not going to.
Right. That would have been interesting, too.
And even
where he says goodbye to all of them, and you're like, oh, this could be, like, a thing where, like, C-3PO is now just, like,
And not only do they undo that moment by, like, fixing everything, they don't even make that moment work. Like, that moment in the trailer feels moving, where he's like, I want to take one last look at my friends.
I thought that was a clip from the end of the movie.
In the movie, I thought, oh, I'm like, when that scene was coming up, I was like, I'm going to cry about this, because, like, I love C-3PO.
But you're like, well, no, the Chewbacca effect means that.
No, it wasn't that. It was just that they just zipped through that whole scene so fast. It was like, oh, okay, I guess this isn't going to be an emotional moment. Right. Sorry, JJ. That's an example of, like, how crappily this movie is directed, I think.
You kind of are C-3PO.
I've always admired him.
He's in over 6 million types of communication.
He was the, look, I never related to Han Solo or Luke Skywalker, but I was like, C-3PO, yes, the coward with a good vocabulary, that's me.
What are the animals on the ice? What's the ice planet called?
Hoth.
Yeah, that's the, whatever kind of animals are
the
there.
The Tauntauns.
I'm a Tauntaun. Yeah.
Well, you are plotting. I'll give you that.
Can I talk about my favorite part of this movie?
Please.
100%. The best part of this movie. So this is for everybody that's already seen it. Very early on, Kylo Ren comes back into whatever space boardroom.
Right.
And he has his helmet all...
Oh, yes.
He's got his helmet all patched together. Moment. This is the best moment in this movie. And so there's the... I don't know, the board of executives that they're all generals or whatever.
Death Star Inc.
And, you know, because he's got... Yeah, exactly. And he says, you know, he can sense it in the room. Kylo Ren says, I noticed some discomfort or concern about my helmet. And so board member number one is
Donald
Gleason.
Yeah.
Who's great. Just goes, oh, you know, like, no, absolutely not. The woman next to him just goes, I like it. Audible laughter coming only from me in the theater. And I was like, I like it.
There's one in every boardroom. Right. That suck
sure
up.
Thing, boss.
I liked Richard E. Grant, actually, as one of the evil general types. He was fun. Yeah, I mean, I just, like, while I was watching it, I wasn't mad during it, because I felt like, all right, this is just this sort of, they're cramming Big Macs in my face, you know, but then half an hour later, you're like,
too many Big Macs.
I don't feel so good.
I thought the ending was lovely. I think Rey going back, I mean, it is again, because of how these movies have existed in my lifetime, to have her go back to
do what? To be a moisture farmer? Like, everything terrible happened on Tatooine for those people.
Right.
Like, Luke hated it. You know, like, Leia never lived there. She just sent the bots down there to find, you know, Obi-Wan in the first movie.
Are you saying that I was manipulated?
I'm saying it's a meaningless ending.
Well, doesn't she go there to hide those lightsabers just in case? So she
which also is pointless.
And then she can have her own. She gets yellow.
I know. She's got her own color. Good for her. But no, it's just none of that. I don't follow these movies. I took my friend Tom, who totally does follow these movies, to the premiere. And the further away from it we get, the more he's like, and another thing.
Right.
And every time he brings one of those, I'm like, I don't know. You're right.
It
you're absolutely
goes back
right.
To what I was saying earlier, is because, you know, you for me, going to this movie, I was so excited. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, I guess we can go see Star Wars today. That's like, it's like a whole experience. Sure. And then about a half an hour in, you're like, oh, okay, great. I suppose this is fine. But also that excitement actually sort of clouded how I sort of took information in the first 15 minutes. Because in the first 15 minutes, and I realized that all these movies, in the first 15 minutes, so many things are like, thrown at you. I mean, yes. There's three paragraphs of reading before every movie. Like,
this and then right into a chase scene.
This is happening. This is happening. These people are chasing this person. This person gets, there's a spy, and he gives the thing to the guy, and then all of a sudden that spy's head is on a boardroom, and then that lady's like, I like it.
okay, so.
I'm done.
End of Star Wars.
Anybody else? Are we good? Are we covered?
What would it have been like if if Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi just existed on their own and there weren't these?
In my mind, they kind of do.
Okay. Because these three movies, what I do like about these last three movies is that in comparison to episodes 1 through 3, is that they look like movies. Like, episodes 1 through 3 don't look like movies. Like, in these movies, there's physical things for people to pick up.
Sure.
And there's shadows. And there's darkness.
Here's the weird thing, though. I think that, like, the 4 through 6 have impact for us because we were kids when we saw them.
Right.
And I think we have a generation behind us that grew up on 1 through 3. And they did. And they take those movies a lot more seriously than we do because they meant something to them when they were 9. And I think there's going to be a generation after them of people who grew up seeing these movies in the theater. So I think they're going to have a different take on it and it's going to have a different weight in their life. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, 4 through 6, and then there's these other movies, and I saw them once and I never thought about them again. But whatever. They will keep making these movies for the rest of our lives because Disney is not going to leave any money on the table.
That's what I think makes these movies less special, is because it's like, you know, there were these three very good movies, and then there's just sort of, now they're bookended by this sort of like...
Well, I on Breakfast All Day, I said like 1 through 3 is all George Lucas all the time and nobody telling him that's a dumb idea. And 7 through 9 is all like... The Walt Disney Company, we paid a gajillion dollars for this thing. We need to, these movies have to make an S ton of money, and they have to like tie into our like theme park amusements.
It does, they do feel very things. Corporate.
So 4 through 6, I think in a way, is kind of a sweet spot in that, yes, it's all George Lucas's baby, but at the same time, he was still, you could still say no to him, or you could still be,
or you
like,
could say, we've run out of money.
No, not
the first one, maybe.
Not that so much, but I think you could be like, Gary Kurtz, I think is his name, the producer of the first one. You could be George Lucas's then wife, Marcia, and be like, that's a stupid idea. That's racist. Let's not do that. You know, but then, so I think 4 through 6 is like, is the best of them because they are coming from a very auteurist place, but one where there were roadblocks.
And you know what, in those three movies, I know we have to wrap up, but in those three movies, like, you could turn on the TV and if Empire Strikes Back is playing, you know that it's Empire Strikes Back. If Return of the Jedi is on, you know it's Return of the Jedi. And if it's the first one, you can tell.
Yeah.
Those movies have specific looks to them. But 1 through 3, I wouldn't be able to tell you which movie it was from.
Yeah, really. Or 7 through 9.
They all kind of look the same.
Good point. All right. Dave is making faces, so we should wrap up. All right, again.
I'm so excited talking.
I need you to go to Ralph's.
Okay, we'll go to Ralph's. Again, thank you all for listening. Wishing everybody a really great year ahead. Until next time, and we mean it this time.
Can you end it with the droid sound?
I mean it this time. For what droid sound?
The one you
Not the
it?
Droid, the alien.
The alien thing.
Can I do it again?
Yeah.
I'm going to gear up.
Goodbye.